Welcome to No Room for Phonies, episode 105.
The title is The Science of Stuck.
And I don't know if this is on the view or not, but this is the book, Breaking Through Inertia. I'm trying to get it in the
frame. I'll hold it up.
In the frame. Breaking Through, and I know the title's backwards.
I can flip that later.
Okay. The Science of Stuck, Breaking Through Inertia. I can't read that word backwards. I said the word inertia, to find your potential. So I read this book quite a while ago.
Yeah, but in the summer I read it. Yeah.
And but we both have read the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 10 chapters. It's not too bad. A lot of storytelling. And she gives a lot of very solid examples. She struggled with addiction herself. And so I think it really helps her.
What really helps her?
Like in her writing.
Oh, yes.
Like a lot of it is, she has her own stories to tell.
Right. It really legitimizes
sure. her. So she starts out by talking about anxiety and that, you know, we all think that having anxiety is such a bad thing.
Well, and it's almost like diagnosable. It's hip to be anxious.
Yeah.
But she talks about it being a physical response.
Yeah.
That we all have as humans.
Right. And if you kind of, she compares it to the check engine light in your car, that if you disabled that, you would be screwed.
Right. So we need the anxiety mode so that we can survive.
Because your brain is wired to keep us alive, but not to necessarily keep us happy all the time. So a panic attack is not an attack. It's your brain talking to you.
Interesting.
So,
yeah.
You know, all these things that make us. So what she ends up giving strategies then is about how you manage all these things. Mm-hmm.
And she comes from a place of severe addiction, recovery, abuse, trauma.
Yeah.
And she's walked through all of those in her journey and is now a physiotherapist. No, not psychotherapist.
I was going to say. The inability to feel pain is not a strength. It's emotional leprosy, she calls it.
Interesting. So numbing ourselves is
not good. And that's what anxiety is not a disease. Anxiety is a response to something, even if you actually can't identify what it is.
Right.
When you feel anxious, you're responding to something. And she even talks a lot about how the chemical imbalance theory of the brain has never of depression has never been proven.
Interesting, because that other book we are reading about depression also kind of explores
hinted at that. Yeah. And a survival response will often look like an anxiety disorder, but it isn't. Like, you're not crazy to feel anxious in certain situations.
Right. And even
like, that's okay.
Even low grade anxiety that we don't know the cause of immediately in our minds is not a bad thing.
No.
It just means something is going on.
You're treating anxiety as a message from your body. There are areas in your life that you kind of, and you have to kind of ask yourself, I'm feeling anxious about this. This is a recurring anxious thought. Are there actually areas in my life that I'm not willing or that I'm hesitant to address because you actually fear the outcome of sometimes it's just, oh, I'm anxious. I can't do that.
Right.
Oh, I can't stop doing that because then I'll have anxiety.
Well, just like having a courageous conversation, it does cause me anxiety, but it's probably because I'm avoiding the outcome.
Yes. You're afraid, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes anxiety makes sense. Anyone in this, like when you say to yourself, okay, anyone in this particular situation, I have to go confront my boss. Anybody in this particular situation would feel anxious.
It's normal.
It may not be able to understand it all or change it all right now, but you know that it's a normal reaction and you're not crazy and you can move forward with strategies that don't have to be medication.
Right.
Like, she's not against it. And
no,
she actually
talks about her medications.
But and I love this line. We can talk about courage and love and compassion until we sound like a greeting card store. But unless we're willing to have an honest conversation about what gets in the way of putting these into practice in our daily lives, we will never change, never ever. And that's actually a quote that she gets from Brené Brown, okay, from The Gifts of Imperfection. I find this interesting. If you dig into most unhealthy behaviors, you'll find hidden rewards. Because when you stay stuck, you prevent discomfort, you protect your emotions, you connect, you promote connection, believing you are bad unless, you know, you kind of act like your parents. Like, mm-hmm, you can't break away from certain trends, right? And it allows you to point to problems like anxiety and depression and not need to cope with your life. You can, mm-hmm, just say, you know, so all those unhealthy habits that we have. And that's what she talks about when she talks about the benefits of staying stuck. Like, you basically, you conserve your energy. You don't do anything,
mm-hmm,
right? You protect your image by not revealing anything about yourself.
So what does it mean to be stuck? So the science of stuck is like, what is stuck?
What did you feel that meant to be stuck in the book? To me, it means not being able to move. Like, there's
well, it's not just
it's being varying
not
degrees.
Able to move forward because of anxiety. It's
there's varying degrees of stuck, right?
Yeah. Like, well, you can be stuck. It's people that are stuck repeating the same bad habits. It's that whole, you know, if you do something once and it's bad, and you do it again.
Yeah, but I think it's simpler than that. I don't think you have to go into giving. You're stuck if you are refusing to change.
Oh, yeah.
Behavior.
Your behavior.
That's the end of it, right?
Mm-hmm. But, and I mean, so, she gives examples like addiction is one.
Yes, she does. Stuck. But stuck is just not wanting to change behavior it is. Could be a very severe thing. It could be
something light.
And, like, it doesn't have to be. So, you know, people stay stuck for all these various reasons, just to manage risk. They don't want to worry about failing. It feels more in control to stay stuck, because as soon as you start changing, we like to stay with the familiar. You want to stay small. You don't risk, you know, financial, using up resources or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You avoid shifting dynamics in relationships. No, all these different things keep us from moving forward. And she refers to procrastination as a form of protection that keeps you from face planting into shame.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm a procrastinator, so I just didn't get that done. So I'm a procrastinator.
But even admitting that has a sense of shame to it for lots of people.
Sometimes I don't agree with that statement, because procrastination...
With my statement?
No, I don't. Because
I agree with her statement, like, but they've done a lot more research into procrastination. So when you procrastinate, you get a hit of dopamine from
That's what
avoiding.
She's saying then.
Okay.
That's what she's saying by all of this, right?
All right, yeah.
You feel better by staying stuck.
Yes.
It's easier to stay stuck...
Mm-hmm.
Than to do something.
Yes.
And she talks about feelings plus stories equals emotions. So you need to welcome them all in a spirit of curiosity, and you can experience genuine joy only to the degree that you understand and accept all the parts of yourself. So if you say, okay, I'm procrastinating or whatever, or I don't want to take this risk, you're telling yourself a story, you're having feelings.
Right.
And those are the emotions that you have. So understanding the function of your behavior is the key to changing it, mm-hmm, and saying, oh, I really don't want to feel that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to. I'm going to take some steps, and I'm going to risk failure and rejection by taking some steps forward. So, and many of the symptoms of this are just responses from your body and not mental illness.
Right. Like anxiety manifests itself with the breathing, the heavy breathing.
Yeah.
The chest
just
tightness,
because you feel
nausea.
Anxiety over something doesn't mean that you have an anxiety disorder.
Right.
And I think, you know, but if you can say, oh, I have an anxiety disorder, then you don't have to do
some of the work.
Some of the work mm-hmm. that it takes, right? Mm-hmm. So she says to replace the words lazy and unmotivated with practical information that you can use to get out of stuck. Like just don't, she talks a lot about trauma. Mm-hmm. Trauma responses can look like too much energy or too little energy. Mm-hmm. And you need a basic understanding of trauma to get yourself unstuck from it.
Right. For like for some people, trauma sets them into a spin of keeping busy, busy, busy,
yes,
busy. So
yes.
that they don't have to stop and right. think. And pause and reflect. And other people, it's the, I can't get out of bed. I yes. just have to sleep.
So signs of unresolved trauma, she says, indecisiveness, over-apologizing, difficulty saying no, ADD, ADHD, OCD, people-pleasing, perfectionism, mind racing, difficulty relaxing, hating surprises, procrastinating, feeling lazy when you want to be productive, inability to stop working when you want to rest. Exaggerated startle response, difficulty enjoying sex or food, or everyone has unresolved trauma because we're all human. Mm-hmm. So she really, and she calls trauma anything that is too much, too fast, or too soon. And it's an internal process, not an external event. So we think, oh, this happened.
You've witnessed something terrible.
Yes, so that is a traumatic. But trauma is actually what happens. The trauma happens inside you mm-hmm. because something is too much, too fast, or too soon. So it's what we hold inside in the absence of an empathic witness. And she calls it brain
indigestion.
In that your brain is overwhelmed, just mm-hmm. like when you're...
when you eat too much. When you eat too much rich food, yeah.
Yeah. Your nervous system can get stuck on up, panic, mm-hmm. anxiety, or down, tired, depressed. Your unconscious brain decides if you're safe, and your brain, it just makes a decision to survive the threat
right.
by doing whatever. And then she goes on to say, trauma explains behavior, but it doesn't
excuse it.
And she calls it an injury that can heal. And you can actively seek ways to feel safer or less threatened in the moment. You can use sensory interventions when you're stuck on down. Like there are strategies. Mm-hmm. And she goes into a lot of detail right. in them to get. And then she talks...
this is why we're doing the book review, because we want you to read the
yeah,
book.
Yeah, yeah. But then she talks about the shadow. And I'm only giving the highlights,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I understand.
Because everything I'm talking about is really detailed in mm-hmm. the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the shadows are refer to the aspects of you that you hide or repress. And the other person that talks about the shadow side a lot is Richard Rohr.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is coming in. Shadow work is the process of being honest with yourself about yourself. And you need your shadow to be whole because wholeness requires light and dark.
Interesting.
So your shadow intelligence... When you hide your shadow, it gains power and then it comes out the wrong way.
Interesting. So this is also, I guess, a way to look at people who might be jarring you wrong or
yes.
people who've mistreated you.
Yes.
It's their shadow coming out.
Yes. Yeah. And the next book that I want to read is the one about, or want to go over is the one about being able to live without worrying about what other people are doing or what
other people
are
thinking of you. Or,
yes, yeah. like that. That's very interesting too. Mm-hmm. So she calls shadow intelligence is a measure of your shadow awareness. So it's IQ plus emotional intelligence plus your shadow intelligence
quotient
mm-hmm. equals success and the freedom to enjoy it.
Interesting.
So when our inner leader is on board, you can manage even your most destructive self, self-defeating behavior. And compassion is not the same thing as permission.
Hmm.
You
so
can be
like being
compassionate with yourself
right.
about the time it takes, but you can't give yourself permission to just stop and get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting. Acknowledging your part. So that's a whole chapter, validating your feelings without excusing or minimizing your behaviors. It's 100% possible to extend kindness to your inner parts while still maintaining boundaries and continuing to take personal responsibility. And sometimes we give our shadows snacks, things that taste good or feel good in the moment. And you have to use mindfulness to fight those. And I thought it was an interesting, because it's kind of the same thing with all boundaries, right? You can remain compassionate and kind to a person while still maintaining the boundaries that you need to bet.
So this is about being kind and compassionate to yourself, but still
having
boundaries.
To me, it does. Yeah. There's a comparison there. And then there's a whole a chapter on like actual marriage relationships. Mm-hmm. Like you can't change your partner, but you can. That conflict is inevitable, but fighting is optional. So for people who have a hard time having like resolving a conflict, she gives examples of like conflict contracts that make you honor the time, the space,
the location,
and when you need a break, and like mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff. And a boundary is what you choose to do in response to someone else. So, and then they say making amends is more effective than saying I'm sorry. There are four parts to making amends: owning the thing you did, observing how it impacted your partner, outlining the plan to not do it again, and offering to listen. So it's a bigger thing than just, it's easy to say, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, no.
It's not so easy to make amends.
Right.
So that's a whole chapter just on partnerships and relationships.
It could just be colleagues and
friends. Oh, absolutely. Too. Like focused, because she does a whole thing on friendships and dating mm-hmm. and the difference between childhood and adult friendships.
Like being a friend with your child?
No. When you have friends as a kid.
As a kid, what those are.
And when you have friends as an adult. And mm-hmm. she talks about how that looks.
Oh, interesting.
And then she does an in-depth chapter on families. All families are dysfunctional to a degree. Perspective is helpful, but healthy, but comparison is not helpful. Mm-hmm. And you have a right to your feelings. The ideal attached. So then she gets into a big deal about attachment styles. Is secure attachment for children? They're happy to explore and play alone, but also happy to interact with other people. Right. So that's secure.
Well, just like when we babysit our friends' little ones.
Yeah,
like,
they were here for the weekend.
Like you can, they're able to be alone for a while and not, you know, and then they also want to be with you.
Right.
Like it's not needy.
They're also fine to be with their mom and dad, but they're also fine to be here with us.
Yes.
Because they're very secure mm-hmm. in their relationships with people. People, you know, they have all these different people in their lives and mm-hmm. they all kind of have it figured out, right? Yeah. So, mm-hmm. and the ideal parenting approach is authoritative, where you set limits and enforce consequences, but you do it from a place of compassion and validation. It's not authoritarian, it's authoritative.
Right.
Instead of thinking of your family as good or bad, think of your family as emotionally skilled versus emotionally unskilled. Mm-hmm. So you can't make your family change again. You can change. And she talks a lot about boundaries. Compassion without boundaries is codependency. So that, and she goes, you know, if you're
summarizing.
Interested in any of these things that, and then she talks about.
I like her sentence about forgiveness, that it's a beautiful spiritual idea, but it is not required to heal emotional injuries.
No.
And yet I was brought up to think that both, if I didn't forgive somebody, I would be moving forward with some chink in my system mm-hmm. that would be broken, and which I don't think is true. My mom believed that if she weren't forgiven, she would not be able to move forward.
Yes.
So it was when her apologies came, it was like,
do you forgive
I'm sorry,
me?
But it was like, I can't move on until you forgive,
me. So
it was a twisted belief.
And I mean, she's kind of saying like, it's easy to say you're sorry. It's a whole different thing to make amends with someone. And then she does a whole chapter on how to recover from really toxic habits. Don't lie to yourself. And there's not a one-size-fits-all cure. Mm-hmm. The goal of addictions and habits is self-protection, not self-sabotage. So she talks a lot about that. The opposite of addiction is honesty. So underneath every addiction, compulsion and habit is unaddressed pain, and making a good decision rarely produces an immediate good feeling.
Right.
So, okay, now I've given up
the addictions
alcohol,
are going to be much more
but
immediate.
I don't necessarily, like, I'm not necessarily feeling better by that.
No.
No, there's recovery and whatever. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because the other book I was reading, they were talking about, you know, children and, or adults even, people who are striving to be noticed, right? Mm-hmm. And we go about being noticed in one of two ways, by being really good or being really bad. And it's kind of like, it's not okay to be normal because you don't get noticed for being normal.
Right.
So that's the game that kids play. So when kids are really, really bad or really, really like want to win and whatever, mm-hmm. it's because they want that attention to be noticed. So it's kind of, there's a kind of a thing in here where, you know, there's some kind of unaddressed pain that's happening in order for that person. Why do people cut themselves? Why do they drink a lot? Why do they, and how do they get into the, and then it spirals into something that's just out of control. And then she does a whole thing about becoming an emotional adult. An emotional regression, is when you feel smaller and younger than your chronological age and physical size. So the holiday season is a prime time for emotional regression. Indecisiveness, people-pleasing, emotional outbursts, imposter syndrome, the solution...
Because we regress to feeling like children.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. The solution to emotional regression is grief. Grieving the past frees you from the compulsion to repeat it. And grief does not happen in stages. She really talks about that. So she does a whole bunch on
like
grief.
The,
you know, it's, you
the
don't
seven
feel
steps
angry,
of grief.
This,
no.
You know. And then she does the final chapter is life is like a game of chess. To win it, you got to make a move.
Nice.
And it's Alan Rufus who is the master's, who has written the book, The Master's Sacred Knowledge. So she gives this little step plan, and of course she goes into extreme
a lot more
detail
for each
about
one.
It, yep. About take inventory, look for easy moves, make a list of three choices, know which pieces you can and can't move, what you have control of, do one thing, listen to feedback, celebrate.
Nice.
So that's her kind of, you got to do something. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, kind of the premise of the book, The Science of Stuck. But she gets into like a lot of detail about it. It's
about
a great
thing.
Book. I sound like it's a lot, but it's a very easy read because there's a ton of examples and there's charts and diagrams and things that
it's
she.
It's very practical.
She talks about self-parenting. And she, at the end of every chapter, she does this thing called do's and don'ts related to whatever the topic of the chapter.
So there's action steps right away.
She also does a whole thing on parenting styles inside it. So very, very interesting. So I highly recommend it. Even if you don't feel stuck, there's we can be very busy and active people and still be stuck in certain things that we aren't moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you can...
Well, I'm not about to share with everybody, but I can think over the past 10 years, 20 years of different things that I've become unstuck from and things that I don't always think about, but then every once in a while something will surface and okay. But now I have a language for it and a resource where before it was like, Do I really have to pay for and go see a therapist, or can I not work this out by myself? And so,
you can say, well, how much is it interfering with my life?
Yeah.
Like, there are examples in this book of stuff where it's very much interfering with their life and they need to go figure it out.
Yes. And they might need a medical doctor.
Yes.
As
and
well
she talks about counseling and medical doctors and she's all for that. But but for the person that says, I'm really stuck. I won't exercise or I won't eat right, or I'm really stuck on eating junk food. I mean, she's giving pretty straightforward, there's very
right.
Or I, when I'm around my mother, I won't say anything like against her, what she believes. Like, so there's things that
Or when
you can get unstuck from that aren't like
when my brother makes fun of my wife, I don't feel I can speak up to him and shut him down.
Right.
Something like
that. Yeah. Or, there's just behaviors and emotions and places that we're stuck. Mm-hmm. So it's a great book. I highly recommend you read it. The next time is February 15th, which is the day after Valentine's Day. But that's when the day after is when all the changes in how you treat each other should happen.
should start happening. So the next podcast, the title of the book is called The Love Prescription. And we'll cover the authors and everything then. But definitely
very practical.
Very practical book on it's a prescription
for married.
Any love relationship, because the authors are very open to all
kinds. Any kind of love relationship.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks for joining us for The Science of Stuck on No Room for Phonies,
episode 105. Yeah.
All right, that's it.
Good night.
And I hope you buy the book and enjoy it.
Hope so.